The station of the nations, AM 1270, WHLD, Niagara Falls, Buffalo, New York. A Citadel Broadcasting Communication Station.
This is Dr. Rob Stahl, and welcome to What Should You Expect at Your Age? The answer to that is a lot, and that's what we're here to talk about. Last month, we talked about some interesting things, very important for older adults, hip fracture, spine fracture, and osteoporosis. Information on that show and the full show you can get at the show's website, whatshouldyouexpect.com. Now, I'd like to read an excerpt from my Expectations for Older Adults. You should expect to be listened to, valued, and respected. You should expect knowledgeable and compassionate health care. You should expect never to be abandoned or forgotten. You should expect not to live a life of loneliness or depression. You should expect to live life as pain-free as possible. You should expect to be given medications that will only make you feel better, not worse. And you should never expect to be taken advantage of except for your talents, knowledge, and wisdom. Those are just a few of the expectations that older adults should keep in mind. Things are not hopeless. There is always something that can be done. Now, today's guests and topics. It was a little hectic pinning down my guests today, but we do have them. One person that was not difficult to pin down, and we had this arranged for quite a while, is Dr. Tammy Lee Demler, who will speak about the Medicare prescription drug benefits and will help guide us through that. She's the president of the Pharmacists Society of New York State and the chairman of the Pharmacists Association of Western New York. Sponsoring this show is Vascular Interventional Associates and the Pharmacists Association of Western New York. I'd like to thank them very much for helping to provide funding to put this show on. And also special thanks to Beechwood Continuing Care. And Beechwood gives me free use of their copying machine. And with those full reins, I make lots of copies of my older adult self-assessment booklet and a caregiver's handbook, approximately a 40-page handbook that many people have taken advantage of. I've had people, nuns from the Philippines who are working with older adults, request the handbook to help them care for older people. You can call me at 636-7531, and I'd be happy to mail you a copy free of charge. Now, we do take calls on this show. We'd love to have your calls, and the call-in number is 855-6848, 855-6848. Let's start the discussion today, and I'd like to welcome my guest, Tammy Lee Demler. Hello, Dr. Demler.
Hello, Dr. Stahl. Thank you for having us. I just wanted to say we were very excited to be part of this discussion because the Medicare prescription drug benefit is critical. It's so important for our seniors to be able to get the medication that they need.
Well, that's for sure, and I'm so glad you could be here. Now, first, I have to interrogate you a little bit about your background and how you became who you are today and how you became interested in senior health issues.
Well, my practice background is is highly variable. I started working in the community, got my Bachelor's of Science degree in 1992, worked at different practice settings in the community, ranging from chain pharmacy, then later to managed care, and now I work in a more institutional setting where we do have a high percentage of geriatric patients. So it's always been of interest to me, and certainly as we face an ever-aging population, we all realize we're reaching a point of crisis with medication costs. So that's part of what I see as my focus in the future is to help address those costs and to help the seniors of the next decade.
Well, that's great. And the topic, the Medicare prescription drug benefit, this is new, and it's been in the news quite a bit. It still, I think, remains quite confusing for practitioners mm-hmm. like me who I'm going to have to help explain it to my patients and give some advice on what to do and whether to recommend it, how it coordinates with HMO medication coverage, how it ties in with New York State and other states that have drug benefits. How does this mesh in with that? Now, I looked at the Medicare Part D, which is what this is called. Medicare Part A is basically the hospital Medicare benefit. Medicare Part B is the outpatient and rehabilitation. Actually, Medicare Part B is mainly the outpatient benefit. Medicare A also does cover rehabilitation. I don't know that we have a Medicare Part C. Maybe you can
tell me. Right? No,
that's coming, but for some reason, I guess Medicare D is for drugs, so that's why they skipped to the D. Now, this is going to take effect January 1st, 2006, so we do have a little bit of time to get up on the learning curve, not much time, and a lot's going on behind the scenes for everyone to get ready, pharmacies, mm-hmm. doctors, institutions like nursing homes, hospitals, et cetera. Now, I went to the Medicare Part D website, and they had a section called Frequently Asked Questions. And usually frequently asked questions are honed down to about 10 questions that cover the major issues.
Your list is very full.
Now, this came up as page 1 of 18.
I bet.
And there are actually 342 questions that are asked on the Medicare D Frequently Asked Questions website. We're not going to go through 342 questions. Okay. But we want to hone it down to maybe 5 main issues mm-hmm. and then give 1 or 2 resources that people can access to get more information. So why don't we start, give us all a little background on what this is all about.
Well, the best idea in the sense of background is to just talk about the current eligibility and coverage parameters that most of the seniors out there are currently covered by. I have a reference here that just says that currently 24% of Medicare beneficiaries do not have prescription drug coverage. That's huge when we look into the context of those seniors having medication needs that they're not able to afford. Frequently we're seeing patients make decisions that are unconscionable, such as eating or taking medication, and that's frequently what the community pharmacist comes up against and trying to help navigate better selections of lower costing agents. However, even that isn't enough. So through federal decisions and discussions, it was felt that a federal benefit such as a Medicare benefit to cover medications globally for patients in need would hopefully be at least a first step in Medicare Part D. Whether or not it'll be the ultimate answer, we'll have to see. I think we'll be able to see how that all pans out with the first few years. We have been in a realm of introductory Medicare preparation with the transitional drug discount cards. That has allowed the pharmacies and pharmacists in the community to be able to spread some of the Medicare information around, at least as a preliminary effort for outreach. But certainly that traditional discount card was really only helpful to some of the senior patients out there. It wasn't as effective as maybe this Part D would be.
So this drug discount card, is that going to go away now
yes.
with Part D?
It was
okay.
transitional.
Okay, that was transitional. Now, you mentioned the choice between food and drugs.
Yeah.
And I saw this very explicitly. I worked on doing a health fair at a senior apartment building, and we had the residents there fill out a questionnaire. And amazingly enough, there were approximately 25% of the people that said they didn't have enough money to afford food.
Right.
You would think they'd have trouble affording medications, but it seems that the choice, drugs come first and then food. And really the most important things that you put in your body is good nutrition. Mm-hmm. So it's really disastrous to have to make that choice. So,
it is. So hopefully this will be a bridge.
Right. And let's get to the bottom line. Mm-hmm. Will this really help people pay for their medications?
It's expected that the percentage of patients out there who have no drug benefit at all right now will be benefited by this drug coverage. Okay, many of the patients out there currently might have an insurance contract through a retiree program or Veterans Administration. Those, in some cases, may be more helpful than the Medicare Part D would be to them. So it really is a very individual process and looking to see what will benefit the patient the most.
Now, just like Medicare, in and of itself, there's a monthly premium to sign up for Medicare. Now, what's it going to cost for Medicare D?
The standard benefit is right now estimated to be a $37 monthly premium. That's just the premium to be a participant within the program. The costs then are structured with regards to coverage ranges. So true out-of-pocket expenses would have to be tallied based on the amount of medication that they're purchasing. So, for example, the first initial coverage would be $250 out of pocket before they would actually start seeing a decrease in the covered benefit by 75%. So once they pay that $250, then their medications are at a discounted price up to 75%. Then they reach a coverage gap that's pretty wide. That goes up to almost $3,000 of true out-of-pocket expense, which can be, you know, somebody's entire drug benefit for the year. But after that, it's catastrophic, and then it's covered up to 95% or more based on their income.
Now, how do people sign up?
Typically, the process to date with regards to the transitional drug benefit card, because that's what we've seen so far, open enrollment doesn't start until November for the transitional or the Medicare Part D benefit, has been through a means of outreach. Different community associations have been able to help with the forms and enrollment, filling out all of that paperwork. It's a bit of paperwork, and the pharmacy community is out there to try to help. So we want to reach out to the seniors to be able to say we can help partner in this with you, because we really do feel it's so important. For those patients who are website savvy, they can download that type of information to fill out and probably enroll even online.
Now, where else will the form be available?
I would say probably through AARP and different senior centers. That would be a good location to start looking as far as people who are partnered in the outreach access portion of it.
Okay, so number one would be to get a hold of this form, mm-hmm. and to complete it,
right.
and send it in.
It's step one.
Okay.
Within the deadline of time.
Right, so when is the deadline to get it in? You said open enrollment starts November?
Yep, open enrollment starts November 15th. That's the initial enrollment. There are provisions to allow people who may require subsidies to go a little bit earlier than November 15th, but that's very individual. The January 1st date is the implementation, so in between that time frame, they'll want to have enrolled and be ready. There is a penalty to pay if you enroll late.
Okay, so it's extremely important to get started as early as possible. What if they are the forms available now?
I believe the forms may be available online. I know Vince Galetta, who will be calling in just a bit, would know more about access for those forms, as he hopefully will address the Epic issue as well.
Okay.
Because it's a little bit of new, exciting information.
All right, so can the forms be filled out even now and sent in?
Sure, especially if a patient looks to see if they are eligible for that subsidized early enrollment.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, we are going to talk about other ways to reduce medication costs. It looks like up to a certain amount of money, reimbursement, you mentioned the 75%, mm-hmm. which is similar to what the standard Medicare benefit gives for doctors' expenses, right. and that sort of thing. And then there would be, I guess, a 25% copay mm-hmm. responsibility by the patient still, even.
Yes.
I think we have a phone call. Let's take the phone call. Hello, it's Dr. Stahl and Dr. Demler. I guess we lost the call. Okay, well, let's continue our discussion. I think we're trying to get Vince, or Vince is calling in, one or the other. And Vince, why don't you talk about Vince and your work and relationship and a role he has in the mm-hmm. Pharmacists Association.
Well, Vince Galetta has been a partner in this with us. Of course, his practice setting is more of a consultant pharmacist, long-term care, so he really has a good sense of the geriatric needs of our patients.
All right, let's see. Vince, are you there?
Hi, Rob. I'm here. Hi, Tammy.
Hi.
Hi, Vince.
Yeah, we've just been, welcome, you're on the air, and we've been talking for the past 10-15 minutes about the general issues involved with Medicare D, how people sign up, the cost of the benefit. And Tammy's been introduced your basic credentials. Why don't you tell us right now what position you're in and how you're so involved with the Medicare D issue.
Okay. Well, I work for... Can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
I work for Buffalo Pharmacies, and we take care of residents in long-term care facilities in the western New York area.
You know, Vince, maybe I don't know if we can get you a little bit louder, make sure everyone can hear you just fine.
Okay, so the residents in the facilities that we care for, many of them are going to be part of the Medicare Part D drug benefit. So that's how... that's how we've had to pick up a lot of knowledge about the transition of these people into Medicare Part D.
And right now, how are their medications being paid for? And now we're talking about a nursing home setting by and large right now.
Well, the people in the nursing home generally paid for by the nursing home, but we have people in adult homes who have private insurance or who have Medicaid, and many of them will be going into Medicare Part D. We have people in state-run facilities, ICFMRs, that are also going to be going into Medicare Part D. So we have people in skilled facilities, but people in other types of institutional settings, and those people are going to be handled differently.
Tammy, do you want to comment on
that?
Yes,
I have a question, though. Those patients are typically the dual eligibles that will be auto-enrolled. Is that right?
Well, the people, 70% of the people in skilled facilities are dual eligibles, and about 20% in adult homes are dual eligibles, and yes, those people will be auto enrolled. But the people with Epic, it's definitely, if you have Epic, it's definitely in your best interest to look into Medicare Part D, because there's various subsidies that are available, plus your copays will probably go down.
Now, dual eligible. Let's just stop there. Dual eligible means people who are currently on or eligible for both Medicaid and Medicare. Is that right, Vince?
That's correct. And then in New York State, there's about 650,000 dual eligibles.
Well, that's quite a bit. And and these include outpatient impoverished people and also people in nursing homes and other institutions.
Yes, most of the dual eligibles actually live outside of institutions, as surprising as that may be.
Do you have any idea in Western New York how many dual eligible people there are that live outside of nursing homes?
No, I don't.
Okay.
Nope, I don't know that.
Okay, but you said throughout the state there's 600,000?
There's over 600,000, yes.
Okay, so if we extrapolate that to the total population of New York State, we can get a rough idea of how many live in this area. It's quite a few. So we're talking about both an outpatient population, people living in their homes, and nursing home populations. Is that correct?
Yes, it is.
Okay, so what three key items of advice would you give to people transitioning now into a Medicare D?
Okay, well, first, the dual eligibles, they're going to be, as Tammy was saying earlier, auto-enrolled, and they'll be going into a prescription drug plan. The first thing that that they should do if they live in the community is go and see their pharmacist and look at the medications that they're on and compare those medications to the formulary that prescription drug plan has, because you need to make sure that all the drugs that you're on are covered, and if they're not covered, you need to check and see if there is another plan that actually covers your medications better.
So this might involve, if someone is enrolled with a certain HMO, in the three main local HMOs that older people
are... Medicare Advantage plans are a little bit different.
Okay.
You need to think about them a little bit differently. But we're just talking about the people that aren't in some type of a Medicare Advantage plan.
Okay. Tammy, you have a comment.
I have a
on
question
that.
With regards to the formulary, though. One thing, it's not really a one-stop shopping on that. From what I understood is the formularies can change with 60 days' notice. So, for example, if a family member were looking at a review of their medication lists, that could change ultimately once they pick a plan.
Yes, it can. But the nice thing for dual eligibles, though, is that a dual eligible can change their prescription drug plan every month.
Without
every
penalty.
Month, 12 months a year. So if your formulary changes, you can shop, you can try to get the physician to approve it on an appeal if it's something that's not covered anymore, or you can change to another PDP and there's no cost for that.
Okay, and PDP, Vince, again?
Is a prescription drug plan.
Okay, now let's just start here, and this, when I first heard it, was confusing, and it's still confusing, so I want to break it down as simply as possible for my benefit and the benefit of all the listeners. Let's say someone is currently enrolled in an HMO, such as Encompass 65, Independent Health Senior Plan, Senior Blue, Blue Cross Blue Shield Senior Plan, and Univera. That's help me with this, Senior Choice. Now, how does that work if someone is enrolled currently in one of those three?
Okay, those people will be, they can be automatically transitioned into the new plan that each of those HMOs have. And what if you're in one of those plans right now, you should call the administrator of that plan and find out what's going to happen and what your options are.
Now, are they likely to get mail describing how they can transition into a new plan that has this Medicare drug coverage?
Yes, at some point they will, but if they're listening right now, I would advise them to call and avoid the rush.
Mm-hmm.
Do it as early as you can, because as we get closer to the end of the year, if there are many seniors that wait, you could get lost in the end of the year rush.
Well,
so if you're in the plan, call now.
Vince, I have a question with regards to patients who have never been really hooked to any kind of drug coverage plan. Can they get those forms through organizations like AARP? Do you know if there's an outreach specifically to those patients?
All right. If you're not in any type of an insurance plan right now and you have Medicare, there are a number of options that you have. Yes, AARP is very actively involved, but there's the two best places to go other than, say, AARP are go to the Social Security office that's closest to you or go to the County Office of Aging, and they are prepared right now to help you.
Can they make phone calls to those places, Vince, as opposed to going there physically?
Well, they might want to call, and then they'll either set up an appointment with them for them to come in,
mm-hmm.
or they could possibly advise them over the phone. I'm not sure how they're doing it, but, definitely make the phone call. And as I said before, do it now. Do it now before we get into November, and that's when the real rush and crush mm-hmm. is going to start.
To help out with this, I think I'll try to find where, at the websites at least, of the different HMOs and Medicare itself, and also the County Office for Aging and Social Security Administration, try and put web links up there.
Okay.
And those that are computer-connected, web-connected, that might help a little bit too. Now, as far as what's the role of the primary care doctor going to be in all of this?
Well, I think from the primary care doctor's position is that, you know, the doctor will know what kind of insurance coverage these people have. The doctor will also know if the person is having difficulty paying for their medications. They'll know how many medications they're on. And just asking the simple question, have you looked at the Medicare Part D plan? Are you considering changing your insurance? Just prompt them to go look would be an excellent advice to give to the senior.
So at least the next time the person comes into their office, the doctor should ask, have you signed up for Medicare Part D?
Yes.
That would be a basic question for the doctor to ask, and the doctor is likely to also be involved in making changes of medications to conform to formularies.
Yeah, I think particularly for people that have Epic and people that have Medicaid, Medicare Part D is going to be different from them because they're going to be subject to a formulary. Now, the nice thing about Epic is that Epic is going to wrap around for just about everything, and they really don't need to be too concerned about the formulary. With Medicaid is not going to wrap around and cover non-formularies. They may cover them on some type of an appeal, So the people with EPIC, you know, 99 times out of 100, the person with EPIC is going to make out better if they get into Medicare D. And they should call EPIC to look into that.
Okay, and we'll put the website link for EPIC as well. And the phone number for EPIC, and they have a toll-free helpline. It's open from 8:30 to 5 p.m. Monday to Friday, and the number there is 800-332-3742. That's the EPIC helpline, and the Medicare phone number is 800-633-4227, 1-800-MEDICARE for the Medicare helpline. Now, people who don't currently have EPIC, and I think there still are a lot of people that just haven't taken advantage of EPIC to help pay for their costs, it sounds like it would still be an advantage with Medicare D to sign up in addition to EPIC.
Yes, if you qualify for EPIC and you're not signed up for EPIC, you know, like you're saying, call EPIC, because if there's not going to be any combination better than EPIC and Medicare Part D.
Okay.
That's the best combination you can have.
All right. Anything else the listeners should know, Vince, or does that cover the basics, the key information for people?
I think the basic is if you're a senior with Medicare and if you have prescription coverage through some other entity, contact that entity, and they will help you look at your options, whether you're better off staying with that entity or going to Medicare Part D. If you don't have any insurance, go to the Social Security office, go to the Office of Aging, contact EPIC, and they will help you sort through all of the initial part. And then once you know what you're going to do, once you know if you're going to go into Medicare Part D, then go and see your pharmacist. Your mm-hmm. pharmacist will take your drugs, match them up to a formulary, advise you as to which plan has the best formulary that matches your drugs, and then that's who you should sign up with.
Now, our pharmacists through PAWNEE, the Pharmacists Association of Western New York, are they allocating extra time to be able to talk to people about this? A lot of people, I think, feel uncomfortable standing at the counter, and when the person at the counter asks, do you have any questions, people might feel a little shy. They're holding up the line. They don't want to hold anyone else up. Is the organization going to do anything special to address that?
Tammy, you want to field that one?
Yeah, I would say that at least, you know, from our professional organization standpoint, is that the pharmacy leadership in Western New York and New York State has really made it a mission to have outreach to the patients through the pharmacists. And so in saying that, you know, the membership pharmacists at least know that that's their focus. For the pharmacist out in the community, suggestion that I might have would be to have the patient ask their pharmacist if they could have help with this, and maybe step back and, you know, leave that information for them.
Yep. Yeah, definitely make an appointment.
Kind of an appointment. You know, don't expect that answer right away, right, Vince? I think
that's right,
it could take some time.
There's going to be a little research done. Plus, at some point in October, the Medicare website, where you can actually go onto a website and compare PDPs and compare the formularies of the PDPs, will be available. Mm-hmm. So if you're computer literate, as you're saying, Dr. Stahl, that's another option for them as well. But it's and you can do that on your own and then go talk to your pharmacist. Or if you want to, just go and see your pharmacist. They'll be happy to help you.
Well, that's a good suggestion, to make an appointment with your pharmacist so you don't get into that uncomfortable situation. I did look at the Medicare website. Right now, they do have an online questionnaire that kind of guides you based on your answers to the right place for information, given your particular situation. So I think there are a lot of resources, and I thank you so much, Vince, for spending some time explaining that. I think it's made it a lot clearer for me, and I hope the listeners also have some specific information now on how to proceed with this. Thanks again, Vince.
Oh, you're welcome. And again, the important thing is don't wait. Do it now.
All right. And don't wait. Get going on this now. Do your legwork, and I'd probably make an appointment with your pharmacist right now before the rush comes. Mm-hmm. That's the best advice. Okay, we're going to take a little break and come right back and continue with this discussion and get into some vascular health issues.
I could have danced all night, I could have danced all night, and still have begged for more. I could have spread my wings and done a thousand things I've never done before. I'll never know what made it so.
Hello, we're back now. It's Dr. Rob Stahl with What Should You Expect at Your Age? We did a little shuffling around of seats and microphones at the break. The song was picked for a reason. I Could Have Danced All Night with Julie Andrews, and hopefully with the Medicare D, once you get that straightened out, you'll feel like dancing all night because you have more money in your pocket. And now we're going to talk about vascular health issues and a vascular screening that is coming up, and perhaps something there. If you're having vascular problems, which we'll talk about in a minute, if you can get those addressed, maybe that'll help you to dance all night too. So I have with me now Dr. Masoud Ababzadeh. He's an interventional radiologist with Vascular Interventional Associates, and Susan Giardino, also with the same group. Welcome.
Good afternoon.
Thank you for having us here.
Well, I want to also say, repeat again, that the show is sponsored by Vascular Interventional Associates and also the Pharmacists Association of Western New York. Dr. Ababzadeh, can you tell us a little bit about yourself? And you don't have to start at age 10, but you can give us some background of how you got interested in medicine and in particular, interventional radiology.
Well, basically, I'm an interventional radiologist, and I mean, our family medicine is the favorite job, basically, so that my parents encouraged me to go to this field. And then I went to medical school in University of Toronto, and then I moved to U.S. and did my internship and residency at Louisiana State University, and then I did two fellowships in Columbia University in New York City in interventional radiology. Basically, I'm interventional radiologist, and what we're doing is an image-guided, minimally invasive procedure that we do with for arterial and venous and non-vascular as well procedures. So it's both diagnosis and also treatment.
Now, two fellowships. What were the two fellowships?
Yeah, one is for the neurointerventional, that basically is for the, vascular problems in the neck and head. That's a carotid, like a carotid artery disease. And also the other one was a non-neurointerventional, that's the rest of the body.
Okay, very interesting. And Susan, What's your background, and how did you get involved with the group?
Kishner have been for 21 years here in the Buffalo area. My background is basically surgical, and I have done years in neurosurgery, general surgery, vascular surgery, and ended up with the vascular interventional group as a way to promote non-invasive type procedures as opposed to major surgical procedures. So it's a new, something new for me, but very exciting.
Now, what do you do with the group exactly? Are you seeing specific patients, doing workups, or are you assisting the doctors?
Exactly. Consultations mainly. There really isn't a lot of assisting being needed for this type of procedure. Consultations and workups and follow-ups are very important with the patients to make sure that they're followed closely, especially our renal patients or people with kidney disease. And we watch their blood pressures and so on to make sure that they're adequately treated. And oftentimes they need to come back to have more procedures done for other areas, depending on how extensive their disease is.
So let me ask you, you know, being a primary care doctor for the most part, a geriatrician, that's what I do. When would I ask for a consult with you as opposed to a vascular surgeon, for example, or even a neurologist or a general surgeon, perhaps? What, and do you have specific criteria of when a doctor would call you to help out?
Well, actually, this is a kind of common specialty in some sort of. I mean, vascular surgeons, interventional radiologists, even cardiologists, and sometimes nephrologists. It's something that we have a common. I mean, patient can be referred by the primary physician either to us or vascular surgeons, or even interventional cardiologist. If the patient referred to us and have a vascular problem, if anything can we can do with a minimally invasive procedure, we can go ahead and do it. But if something that needs to be done like a bypass surgery, then we can refer it to the vascular surgeon. So it really, it can either be referred to us by a primary care physician, by an internist, or you can refer to a vascular surgeon.
So you really work as a team, and I guess it all comes under the umbrella of vascular health. How do you maximize someone's vascular health? And the vasculature is getting blood to the parts of the body that need it. And you did your two fellowships. One was involving getting blood basically to the brain.
Brain, yeah.
And
the rest of the body, basically.
And the other was getting it to the rest of the body. And so there's this free screening coming up. And let me find the announcement. It's Vascular Interventional Associates. There's a free screening program for people with leg pain. So this is targeted at people that are experiencing leg pain. Many people over age 50 who have pain in their legs while walking often chalk it up to aging. And me as a geriatrician, I don't chalk up many things to just aging. And the story I tell is a story that everyone should remember, that and I'll apply it to vascular health. There's a woman who's walking, and she comes into my office and describes a problem when walking. A 95-year-old lady, and she says, "Doc, you know, I get pain in my right leg while I'm walking." And she says, "But, you know, I'm 95. What should I expect at my age?" And I ask her, "Well, how's your left leg?" And she says, "Well, you know, that's okay. That doesn't hurt as much when I walk." And I say, "Well, isn't your right leg the same age as your left leg? You know, so, you know, how can the right leg problem be solely because of age, where the left leg isn't as bad?" So that's a very important message to remember. And in most cases, you can't just chalk things up solely to aging alone. Now, tell me a little bit about this screening. So it's for aimed at people who get pain in their legs while walking.
But, I mean, the main issue, I think, that because many people, when they have, as you said, they have a pain in the legs, I mean, they cannot exactly know what's the source of the pain and where the pain coming from. It could be vascular, could be non-vascular, could be from, I mean, any neurologic disease, like, I mean, degenerative disease in the spine. And really, patient cannot, I mean, go to the primary physician and say, "We have a leg pain." The purpose of this is that we want to find out the source of the pain is the vascular or non-vascular. And if it's the vascular, I mean, that's the best important thing, is that if we can treat it as soon as possible, because it's, I think that's the key, that if there's any peripheral arterial disease, to treat it as soon as possible. Otherwise, it might end up to amputation or even death if it, nobody pay attention to it. So what we're going to do, with the test that we're going to do in that screening, we call it ABI, that stands for ankle brachial index. This is basically, it's very non-invasive procedure, I mean test. It's just like taking a blood pressure. We're going to take blood pressure for the arm and also take blood pressure of the leg. And the ratio, normal ratio should be 1. If it's below the 1, so it's not abnormal, it means that the source of the pain is a vascular. But depends, if it's from 0 to 1, if it's 0.7 to 7, it means that mild disease. If it's from 0.7 to 0.4, it means that moderate. If it's below 0.4, it's a severe vascular disease. So with that very simple test, we can diagnose that the patient has an arterial disease or not. And based on that, if the patient has an abnormal ABI or ankle brachial index ratio, then we can go for an ultrasound, Doppler ultrasound. They can show the vascular anatomy, if there's any narrowing, much better. And if still there is some problem, then we can go for the routine angiogram and take a look if there's any stenosis or narrowing in the artery in the legs, and then we can do the percutaneous angioplasty and stenting, the same that we do for the coronary arteries in the heart. So that's prevent for the more advanced disease and make end up to amputation.
Now, what percentage of people over 65, let's say, I don't know if you know the exact numbers, but how many people are likely to have peripheral vascular disease?
They said one out of three or four people, one of them, they have a peripheral vascular disease at least.
Okay, so we're talking about a very common,
issue
that's often attributed just to aging.
Yeah, and the other important issue is that because the process of the arterial disease, basically artery in the body is all from brain to the legs are the same structure kind of, and if there's any, artery in the leg has an inflammatory process or atherosclerosis, it means that patient might have the same thing in the coronary artery, might have the same thing in the carotid artery. So it's it's worth it to have a complete screening of the, any stress test for the heart or any ultrasound for the neck and the brain if there's any problem, so we can be fixed before it's going to be late.
So basically people that are found to have disease in the legs are also more likely to have blocked arteries going to their heart.
Yes.
And going to their brain. So that's very important to know.
Also kidney too, I'm sorry, so that's causing high blood pressure.
Yeah, and a lot of people don't realize that the kidney is very involved in controlling your blood pressure. And if there are blockages to arteries in the kidney, it can actually cause high blood pressure. So people who are having trouble with blood pressure control and are on different medications, but they just don't seem to be working, another thing to look into is whether there's a blockage to an artery going to the kidney. You have a questionnaire, also a lifestyle questionnaire, that's also going to be given when someone comes in. And I would imagine the lifestyle questionnaire would involve things similar to what might predispose to heart disease. So can you tell me about the details of that lifestyle questionnaire? Just a few of the examples of what's on that questionnaire.
Yeah.
Go ahead. There's basically your basic screening questions, family history, also smoking history, of course, is very significant. How much they smoke, how long they've smoked. If they have any history of any coronary artery disease, or whether they're just coming in for the basic screening. Do they have high blood pressure? Do they have high cholesterol? Are they on cholesterol medications? All of these questions will be asked. Also, how active they are, if they are exercising at all, if they ever have in the past, or if this is something that at age 85 they're just going to start because they read somewhere that this was probably a good thing to do. So those are the key elements in the screening process.
And what about diabetes? How does diabetes?
Of course, diabetes plays a huge role.
Okay.
It can affect all of the arteries, kidney, and the peripherals especially. And that's where you get into also the difference between diabetic neuropathies versus your vascular problems as well. So there's always that you have to keep in mind, the diabetes.
Do you also get into the metabolic syndrome, this entity that involves high blood pressure, obesity, and diabetes?
Well, we see that obviously when we ask our screening questions, and we'll evaluate that afterwards, but that's not the main focus of,
right,
of a screening tool.
Is there an association also with peripheral vascular disease and being overweight?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I mean, with the overweight patient, the high cholesterol and, you know, peripheral vascular disease, I mean, definite relation, I mean, association between obesity and the vascular disease, yes.
Okay, so you mentioned people will fill out a questionnaire looking into all of these different things. So if the person's had a heart attack, if they've had a stroke, they're more likely to also have blocked arteries in their legs. Now, then you measure, you call the ABI index, the ankle brachial index, which is basically comparing the blood pressure in the arm to the blood pressure in the ankle. And if everything was fine, your blood pressure should be the same everywhere. There shouldn't really be a difference. And if there's a blockage, it only makes sense that the blood pressure is going to be less after where the blockage is, and that's what you're looking for. And the less that it, you know, the smaller that the number is, if you have no blood pressure in your ankle, that would represent a total blockage of the artery down at the end of your leg. And then, as you were describing, after you do that very simple measurement.
And just to say that this ABI is a very simple test. It takes only about 10 minutes, so it would be a very short time that they would be in the screening.
And it's non-invasive. There's no needles. It's basically like getting your blood pressure. Blood pressure done. And around your ankle, I would imagine it's less uncomfortable than having your blood pressure on your arm done.
That's right.
And if anybody with an abnormal ABI, then we can, schedule for the further tests and examinations. As I said, the next step is Doppler ultrasound.
And you mentioned ultrasound. That's also non-invasive.
It's also non-invasive. And after that, we can go for MR angiogram. That's also non-invasive. And if it's needed, go to conventional angiogram. That's minimally invasive. Just basically make a very small incision in the groin and access to the artery in the groin and put a very small catheter in the artery in the groin and go look at the vasculature in the leg by injecting extra dye.
Now, there's a lot of people that I've seen in the past have had bypasses of arteries in the leg, jumping over big arteries that are in the leg to try and get past those blockages. Now, you're an interventional radiologist, and you're not doing that kind of surgery, taking...
you know that bypass surgery basically is not as common as it was before, first of all, because for bypass surgery is pretty invasive procedure. It's like an open surgery, and, well, patient... I mean, has to stay in the hospital for a few days, and basically the recovery is much more than just do the percutaneous treatment. That's what the interventional radiologist does. And as I said, bypass surgery is not as common as it was before, because now we can do the angioplasty. Just put if there's area of the narrowing and stenosis, you can just put a balloon there and inflate the balloon and open up the artery. Or even if there's a total occlusion, we try to pass a guide wire there and try to balloon and even put a stent there, the same way that we put it for coronary artery. It's like that. You want to do the open heart surgery, or just do the coronary angioplasty and stenting. The same philosophy is in for the leg too.
So you do put also stents in, in the leg,
yes,
to help hold that artery open.
And but there are many methods. I mean, this is one of the procedures we do to open up the artery is putting a stent. There are many, I mean, high-end technology that we are doing now, like a cryoplasty, that basically we, instead of putting the conventional balloon and inflate the balloon, we basically, there's a gas, nitric oxide gas, that make the artery to be, frozen. That kind of break the plaque in the artery, that we call it cryoplasty. That we are one of the, very few places that we do the cryoplasty in that area, in this area. And the other thing is the Silverhawk procedure, that basically we remove the plaque without doing any angioplasty and stenting and open up the artery. So basically, we do any kind of procedure to try to open up the artery instead of cryoplasty, conventional angioplasty, stenting, and atherectomy.
Now, people might be worried that if you're breaking these plaques, that they might be going further down the leg and blocking things off. How do you prevent that?
Well, basically, we give the blood thinner, we call it the heparin, during the procedure that make the chance of the break in the clot and go to the, distally to the artery in the distal leg, it make it very uncommon. And I have done many of these procedures, maybe one or two in all procedures I've done. I'm not saying that there is no risk, but there is very, very little risk.
And Susan, what do you see in terms of how patients end up after this? How does it change their lifestyle?
Well, the nice thing about it is this is a either an outpatient or an overnight procedure, so they have very minimal recovery time. They're up and walking, and they're finding that within a very short time, they're able to resume most of their normal activities that they were doing before. So for them, there's less recuperation usually makes them a lot happier.
Well, you have this, the free screening going on. It's taking place, and it's actually joining, the Vascular Interventional Associates is joining hundreds of other places across the country. Is this Vascular Health Month or something
yes,
like that?
Yes, this is Peripheral Vascular Disease Awareness Month.
Okay, so that's what September is now, along with, I don't know what other things
sure
occur in September, but
Grandparents' Day and
but,
everything.
I mean, it's certainly something that's very important, and it can change your life. It can even save your life, potentially, if you are found to have severe disease. It might indicate that you're on the verge of having a heart attack or a stroke. Now, these screenings, the first is being held on Thursday, September 22nd, at Buffalo General Hospital. It's 100 High Street. The second, and these screenings are all day long. They're 8 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. And the second is at St. Joseph Hospital on Friday, September 23rd. That's at 2605 Harlem Road. And the space is limited, though, as I see here, and you need to make an appointment. And for Buffalo General, you should call 859-2840. And at St. Joseph's Hospital, 447-6205. It sounds like something that's very worthwhile. Are there any other screening type things and other vascular health issues that you get involved with that might also be important for someone to consider?
Well, we don't only focus on arterial disease, but there's also venous disease. So we are doing a venous screening event coming up in October 15th, actually. And that will be preceded by a community lecture, actually, tomorrow evening. And we'll be talking about the newest procedure, which is venous closure procedure, whereby we can close off the superficial saphenous veins, the varicose veins that people find to be unsightly, and can reduce the symptoms of swelling and fatigue and tiredness that occur in the lower extremities because of the valve incompetency that develops over time in the lower extremities. So these are very exciting procedures because they're also done as outpatients, and they decrease the symptoms, and they allow people not to have to wear the ugly, heavy stockings that they've had to wear in the past. And also, it eliminates the need for the extensive vein stripping procedure that was done in the past over time.
Well, and then also, a lot of times a water pill is prescribed for swelling in the legs.
Right.
And if you can avoid that, I've had numerous patients not through any fault of my own, but you prescribe these medications and they can cause potassium imbalance and more problems along those lines. So, the flip side, the arteries get the blood out to the extremities and the veins bring them back. And if there's problems getting the blood back, that's when you get the swelling and other problems that develop from vein problems. And it can be also skin sores.
Correct.
And we're not just talking about swelling. It can be sores that get infected,
ulcers.
And that's right.
Again, screening for the varicose vein is very simple. We're going to do a very simple ultrasound just only for a few minutes, and it shows if there's any incompetency of the vein. And if it is, then we can schedule for the, complete process, test and everything to follow up by us. But the screening is very simple, basically, and non-invasive.
So the vein screening, then, is tomorrow, you mentioned.
There's a lecture tomorrow to talk about
tomorrow.
It. And
okay.
Then the screening event will be in October
okay.
15th.
Okay, so the lecture, it's at the Apple Tree Mall? Is
that's
that
correct, the Community Health Center.
And that's from 7 p.m. to 8:30 p.m. No doubt there's some kind of refreshment available. I don't know what it is, but...
neither do I. So.
That's an incentive. You can go get your dessert there tomorrow night for the talk. And then the screening is October 15th at St. Joseph Hospital.
That's
now,
right.
Is that going to be all day long
as
well?
Yes, it'll be another all-day event.
Okay. Well, it's fascinating. I think... you're doing great things. Certainly when I started my training and even finished my training, a lot of this wasn't even available. And anything that's non-invasive is certainly welcomed by me, because I don't want to put my patients through anything that's going to be traumatic or might end them up in the hospital for a prolonged period of time. So this sounds very exciting. And with people living longer, certainly vascular health issues are always going to be there, and they're going to be more common. If you get them taken care of sooner than later, I think you mentioned that, Doctor, early on, that the better off you're going to be, preventing the problems in your legs and potentially preventing heart attacks and strokes as well. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. Let me get a number if people are interested. I think Vascular Interventional Associates, the main number is 852-1977. You can ask any of these questions about arterial health and venous health and even high blood pressure. I think if you have high blood pressure and you're on a lot of medications, you don't seem to be getting anywhere, you can talk to the staff there about whether kidneys might be involved. Once again, I'd like to thank our sponsors of this program, Vascular Interventional Associates, and our guest today for being here. I think that was very interesting. And then also the Pharmacists Association of Western New York, Tammy Lee Demler, in the first half of our show, going through Medicare Part D, the Medicare Prescription Drug Benefit. I'll give numbers again. Vascular Interventional Associates, 852-1977. Dr. Demler and the Pharmacists Association of Western New York, their number is 564-0860. Medicare, to ask your questions about Medicare D medication benefit, 800-633-4227. And EPIC, the New York State Drug Benefit Program that works in conjunction with Medicare D, 800-332-3742. You can also call me at my office and leave a message, 636-7531, if you have any questions about this show or other shows, if you want a copy of the Older Adult Self-Assessment Booklet, if you're a caregiver and like a copy of the Caregiver's Handbook, please call me. You can also email me at drstall, like Dr. Stahl, at buffalo.edu. And you can check out the show's website also with links to a lot of the same information, whatshouldyouexpect.com. Next month, the show will be October 3rd, 1951. And for baseball fans, that's the 54th anniversary of the shot heard around the world, Bobby Thompson's home run, three-run homer to clinch the Giants winning the pennant over the Brooklyn Dodgers. So it was the New York Giants against the Brooklyn Dodgers, the 54th anniversary. Will be our next show, October 3rd, and I'll see you then.